Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And like always, I like to say this program's about our evolution, about the evolution of our consciousness, about the ever-increasing awareness to sensitivity, is another way of putting that, to an evolving possibility that we are growing into becoming more of ourselves. And that has to do with sensitivity, awareness, consciousness, all those things we've talked about. But I think there's no organization that approaches that whole philosophy like the one tonight's guests represent. I'm talking to Justine Dawson, and she is a part of One Taste. So I have had One Taste speakers on the program, including the founder, Nicole Dadone. She's been a guest on the show a few times. But we're going to talk about another evolution to One Taste. Welcome, Justine.
Hi, Alan. Hi, everybody. It's great to be with you tonight.
Well, you sound so sweet and soft. And, from what I know of One Taste, and I've been involved since they were in New York. I mean, and then I, in and out of it. It was mostly for women as a way, and this is my understanding, a way of freeing them, allowing them, liberating them to feel their bodies more, and to feel that orgasm was something that was possible for everyone, and that we could live in that state. So, has there been an evolution to that sort of philosophy, or is there more to it that I'm missing?
That's a great start. And I would say that, yeah, that's a foundation, but there's so much more. And I really loved how you opened the show and said it's about sensitivity to a possibility greater than ourselves, like using that language. Because if there's one thing that I can say that OM does, the practice that we teach, is it teaches people to feel, like no matter what your gender is, no matter who you are, it gives an opportunity to cultivate repeatedly over time the ability to feel, meaning you can feel your own body. Like, yeah, as women, we can feel our own body, but as anybody, you can learn to feel yourself more, your own sensation. You can feel connection more, attuned to relationships and really all of life. And so in some ways, as you could say, feeling is the basis, but it expands all out into a web of connection.
Well, I really like that because, in my philosophy, I think the only reason we are here in the body is to feel. That's the purpose of incarnation, on whatever way you want to look at it. So I think what One Taste is doing is facilitating the understanding of our bodies, our relationship to our bodies. Would that make sense?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, there's so many places that you could be, but if you're going to be here on Earth, it's an opportunity to feel. And we have so many things that inhibit us from that, so many crossed wires in our conditioning, or so many things that freeze us. And so the ability to actually learn to feel, to defrost, to actually get fully inside of our bodies and live from there, that's a huge thing.
Well, so that's how it started out. I mean, that's sort of Nicole's vision, right? To have that. And then, I mean, sexuality is a big part of feeling because it is, in a sense, where we feel the most in our bodies, right? I mean, talk about sexuality and orgasm and all that.
Absolutely. I would definitely say is that, sex is the place where either people, shut down or react or, have so much pleasure. But without a doubt, for by far the majority of people, it's where there's the most sensation, there's the most charge. And deliberately, we use that portal. We go in through that gate because there's so much there. And it's a place that's really hard for most people to stay conscious. That's why you see all the extremes of it. But to actually go into the center of sex, into that intense connection, and to be able to stay awake and fully feel how much is there. Because sometimes there's so much feeling, it can almost blow you out. But to actually be in the center of it and to learn to be conscious there, to evolve yourself there, and then from there you can extend it out into all areas of life. And certainly I found that to be true for myself.
Well, isn't it sort of ironic in a sense because, sexuality and the feeling and the pleasure, it's where, in a sense, we should be the most conscious. because it's the most pleasurable. And why aren't we, what's happened to us as a civilization, as a race of beings, that we became less conscious in that very core aspect of ourselves?
Such a good question. You know, I think there's so many things, and I bet like each person you could talk to would have their own story about that based on their, you know, culture and history and personal psychology and all of that. And, you know, this, from all the people, you know, we've had thousands of people come through and do this work. And what I say is that there are some fundamental things, you know, there's, you know, we live in a culture of disconnection. We live in a culture of isolation. And so when it actually comes to connection, there's a lot that's shut down, that's frozen up. There's so much shame around sex. You know, look at the way that people are educated, especially, you know, men and women both. But, you know, especially if you look, I'll speak as a woman, you know, for female sexuality, it's like, you know, you're either a virgin or a slut. And it's like, there's not much really good mid ground. And so to actually be like, oh, what does it mean to be fully in your body and to fully feel? We don't have practice in it. It's not something that people say like, hey, you could cultivate that. You could learn it. And it's just as important as learning anything else. And I would say, though, that because sex is so charged, you know, it is the time where we can feel the most in life. Like, our bodies can be saturated in sensation. That it is, you know, even I think if you come, you know, I came from a background, I had done years of meditation practice, so much mindfulness, so much cultivation in silence, in solitude, in seclusion. And then it's a whole other thing to bring it into the realm of relationship when it's you plus another, you know, engaging with different people. And you know, it's just like an amazing opportunity for wake-up practice.
Right. I mean, part of that also, though, with one taste, I mean, from what I've noticed, and actually I saw a beautiful demo where you were the, I guess, the one tasty, you know.
The strokey.
The stroke, yeah. I mean, Nicole was how do you call it? Giving you an orgasm.
Stroking me, yeah.
Yeah, which means what? If you want to explain that in technical terms to our audience.
Sure. So at One Taste, we teach a practice called orgasmic meditation, where a woman lies down, and for 15 minutes, her partner strokes the upper left-hand quadrant of her clitoris, lightly and deliberately, with no goal but to feel. And what happens in that is that an electricity can emerge, an electricity that we call orgasm, that expanded state of sensation, of aliveness, of energy in the body. And in that, both people can tap into it and feel it. So when two people are oming together, it's like they're both plugging into this socket, and this electricity and energy can move between the two of them. So not only do they both get, you know, more aliveness, more vitality, more energy, but they also feel greater connection, because it's in that moment that you realize you're connected. You can both feel this thing happening.
So what happened with you, Nicole? It looked like you were definitely enjoying yourself.
I mean. Yes, I would say I was. So in this experience that Alan's talking about, we did a demonstration of the practice, which is what we do in classes and conferences and things. So I was lying on a massage table and had my legs spread open. I was just undressed from the waist down. And Nicole put her left index finger, the tip of her left index finger, on my clitoris. And she stroked lightly and deliberately the upper left-hand quadrant. And in that contact, plus both of us bringing our attention there, an energy was cultivated, sensations developed, like in both of our bodies. And so you not only could we feel it, but also, you know, I think Alan would say that also the whole audience can feel it.
Because yes, it was an audience of like 100 people were watching this demonstration, just so people know.
Yes, 100 people. Last year at our conference, 1,000 people were watching. We also did one. So it really, what happens is, you know, I think we all know, when you're in the experience of orgasm, you radiate something. You can feel it deeply, and other people can feel it too. You know, you might not always realize this, but you can notice when you see someone after they've had sex, or when orgasm's been in their body, you can feel something different about them. Usually they feel really good to be around.
Right, they radiate. They radiate an energy. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and but, I would say that's the same energy. People call it different things, like life force or prana, whatever you want to call it. We call it orgasm, and the clit's the way that we cultivate it.
But were you feeling something special because you know Nicole, or and she probably, they call her the Jimi Hendrix of Oming, but
she
actually
that,
looks like she's playing an instrument when she's doing that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, you know, each Om is different. I practice Om regularly, and I feel it differently every time. And, you know, sometimes I can feel it as an earthy, low rumble through my whole body, like a sexy, animal, grounded kind of feeling. Sometimes it's light and ethereal and expansive, like you're being released from gravity. Sometimes it's really calming and peaceful, like my whole system is being smoothed out. Each time it's completely different, and through the 15 minutes it's different. Sometimes there's really high vibratory expansive peaks, and sometimes it's just like good sex, like being fucked well. And so it really has the whole ride. And when I do a demo, you know, Nicole and I have been friends and practitioners together for a long time. We've been working together for 7 years. And, you know, we're not sexual partners in any other way, which is something that's good to clarify. We're practice partners. You know, we create things together and we do demonstrations together so other people can feel it. And there's definitely something when you do a demo is that not only can we feel each other because we're connected, you know, one of the things that we're getting to see through Om and through research that's emerging is that we're biologically wired for connection. You know, a third of our brain is set up as mammals to feel into the feeling states of other people, and Om helps cultivate that. So, you know, not only do you feel your partner when you're Oming, and can you actually sync up with them so that you're starting to feel the same thing, but when you Om, if, for example, in a demo, when I'm in a room with 1,000 people, I can also feel them, and not just feel them lightly, but it's obviously a very vulnerable position to be in, so I can feel them really deeply.
Wow. Well, some of the, I would say, not complaints about one taste, but some of the issues that some people have had over the years is there, it is in a way non, it's a turn on, but it's non-sexual, or there's a, it's a different type of sex, or it's not sex at all. I mean, some of the one tasters even say, well, this is not sex, this is Oming. And so it's a little confusing, because if you're moving the sexual energy, it's sex for most people, including Bill Clinton, but you know, it's sex.
But, I would say it's sex and so much more. So, you know, you're stroking genitals, and sex is a part of that. And sex is not the only thing, but we love sex. You know, sex is amazing. It's potent. It's connective. You can enjoy it in 1,000 ways. And what we do in Oming is we cultivate orgasm. And so I would say orgasm is this value neutral but potent energy that you can cultivate, and then you can use it in so many different ways. So you can go, and when your body's full of that energy, you can use it to cultivate amazing, deep relationships. You can use it to create, like as an artist or an entrepreneur, you know, you can funnel it into your spiritual practice and use all of that energy to work on your mind state and understanding. You can use it for parenting. We have a lot of Omers that are parents, and they say, wow, I'm so much more patient. You know, I just feel so much smoother. I have so much more love for my kids. I just feel like I'm nourished and filled up. My relationship with my partner is easier. And so
but is Oming the only... Well, okay, finish what you're saying, sorry.
I was going to say, so you Om, you cultivate this energy, and yeah, like it has a sexual nature to it, and you can use it for whatever you want.
Wait, so you cultivate the energy, but is there a difference between cultivating the energy and actually orgasm itself? I mean, I'm trying to understand. I mean, of course, I've been around it, and it varies from person to person. But what do you mean by orgasm or cultivating orgasm?
It's great. It's actually a really important question, because when we talk about orgasm, we're not talking about it in the standard definition, which is what I would say is climax. So when most people think about orgasm, we have what I'd say is more of a masculine view, not a male view, because men can experience different types of orgasm too. But a masculine view, which is, you know, in that kind of orgasm, there's a building of energy, sort of, you know, linearly towards a peak where there's an expulsion, a going over, and then a decline, and then, you know, usually a nap or something like that. But there's this, and women and men both experience that kind of orgasm. We call that climax. In this other kind of orgasm, which I'll call feminine orgasm, and I wish I could show you a chart right now, but you can imagine it's like a roller coaster. It's going up and down and left and right and in all kinds of directions. Mm-hmm. Is that it's unpredictable. It's not linear. It's not goal-oriented to one peak.
So it's not going towards a climax, you're saying.
It's not going for the climax. Climax might happen as one of many other possibilities. Just like in OM, the feeling of sex might happen. Like it might be right there and it feels really good, but a lot of other good feelings happen as well. In the same way, this experience of orgasm is about the high peaks and the low valleys and the subtle rooms you can enter and the really dense, heavy sensation. It's all of it. And, you know, we even can break it down. We often say there's 8 stages of orgasm. I think there probably is like infinitely more, but it's one model of looking at it is that climax is one of those 8 stages. But when we get hooked on thinking it's all about climax, we miss all of the other stages. It's like being in this beautiful, huge house and only ever going into one room. In OM, you know, we open doors and we go explore all of the different rooms with their subtlety and complexity of sensation. And the climax room's a lot of fun, but you don't want to only hang out in there because then you miss all the other experiences too.
Right. No, I missed some of that. But yeah, so you're saying then that, let me see if I can integrate everything you've said. Orgasm, according to you, it's really the ability to feel the range of sensations that are available to us and not just the climax. Is that how you would say it?
I would say that the experience of orgasm is that when we surrender into our involuntary. And what happens when we surrender to our involuntary is there's all kinds of sensations. So we know that in climax, we can feel this peak, like there's heat and flushing and swelling, and there's ejaculate of different kinds. There's heartbeat racing. But we also know that even before and after climax, there can be degrees of that. So you can tap into, you can actually feel and cultivate that energy of orgasm in all different stages. And the way that you do that is through the experience of surrender, through allowing yourself to open and feel. That's what we actually cultivate through the practice of OM.
But is there a moment where it goes from stimulation, you know, clitoral stimulation or whatever kind of, to orgasm? Is there, that's the involuntariness, right? It's like where...
Absolutely. You notice a difference. And because, you know, for a lot of us, and this was certainly true of myself before OM, during sex or, you know, during anything orgasmic, I was in my head. And it was thoughts. And it was like I was observing the experience or I was somehow outside of it, but I wasn't immersed in it. And what happens, you know, orgasm is happening because there's immersion. There's nothing outside of it. You know, you can see the parallels to other kinds of experiences in life. But truly what there is that feeling of you're so immersed in the sensation that there's nothing else. There's nothing else but that connection and that sensation flowing through you. It might not be the point of climax, but it may be this feeling of being completely inside of your experience, completely inside of the connection, with nothing separate, nothing outside.
Well, can I ask you personally, how long did it take you to get there? Because probably you came from a pretty, like you said, a sort of traditional background, and we're not really used to being inside our own experience. So it's a practice. Can you talk about your own experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when I came to the practice, I came from a long background of Buddhist meditation. I spent many years studying. I was training to be a Buddhist meditation teacher. I spent up to a year in silence doing a lot of cultivation of, you know, Vipassana, insight meditation. So I had experience being with myself. But entering into the arena of orgasm was like a whole other domain. I would say it's almost like in action. How does it actually show up in connection with another person? When there's
Didn't you have an aversion? I mean, being a Buddhist, they're very uptight people, the ones I've met. I mean,
yes, it's true.
So how did you go from Buddhism to orgasm? That would be a good title for a biography, right?
It's a good story. I actually was in my Buddhist teacher training. I had started a six-year training after many years of practice. And a friend of mine at that training, I had known him for several years before, and I saw him go through a huge transformation. And he was pretty quiet about it. He didn't tell me a lot. But finally one day I said, like, you know, what's happening? You know, what have you been doing? Because you seem so different. He went from being kind of how sometimes you could imagine, you know, a man in the spiritual communities, that he was sort of withdrawn, a little more of a wallflower, a little more effeminate. And I saw something change in him where he showed up and he was exuding an energy that was completely different, and a confidence and a presence and a sense of gravity that I hadn't felt before.
Wow.
So he told me
about that. Sounds so exciting. Anyway, yes.
It was pretty amazing to truly
I think we should go into all those little Zen monasteries and show them what it's really about. Anyway, so what happened?
I definitely think that, you know, having been on both sides, that Om gives you a vitality. And for me, what it was is that I was good at transcendence. I was good at rising above or that experience. And what Om did for me is it brought me fully into my body. And
going back to that guy, though, sorry. He said what to you, and what was your reaction? Was it shock?
Well, it was, you know, actually at that point he said, well, I've been doing this practice called orgasmic meditation, and he started to describe it to me. And I just said, that's totally crazy. I'm never doing that. It was so outside of the realm of what I'd known and how I'd experienced myself and life and sex. But what happened, as it does when you hear something that's true for you, it planted a seed inside, and he never brought it up again. But that seed germinated inside of me for about 3 months until finally I had to go and look it up and look up the website and go and take a class. And the day I walked into that class, because, you know, I was attuned in other ways, I could feel something that was different. I knew there was something there. And I learned to Om, and I never looked back. It was an experience of being able to feel so much in my body and so much in connection with another person. You know, up until that point, I was ready to take on the robes and shave my head and say, like, oh, all this relationship world, it's like, it's not worth it. I'd much rather be in silence. It's so peaceful. It's so beautiful. I love the mind state. But what it did is that there was also a part of me that didn't want to leave anything behind and didn't want to cut anything out. And when I discovered Om, that's what it did for me, is it gave me an access point to be able to experience these extraordinary states, but in connection to others and inside of my body rather than above or beyond it.
So what do you say about that Buddhist state? Do you feel like they're missing a whole piece, or is it okay with what they got? I mean, what's your personal judgment and opinion about that?
I would say each person has their own path. And truly, I feel for myself and many others that, you know, being that we're on the earth at this time, that there is a benefit to learning to be inside of your body. And you might feel in the monastic renunciate path might be for you, but if you're not going to take that path, you know, I say take one path and follow it all the way to the end, and maybe the renunciate path is that for you. But if you're not going to take the renunciate path, you know, it's our job to learn to live in our bodies and to learn to live in relationship and to learn how to work this thing. And right. You see, you know, so much unconsciousness. So here's an opportunity to actually learn how to work with it.
Well, my opinion is that it seems like the Buddhist philosophy and all the religious dogma philosophies are about being more unconscious. And the dogmas of a celibate path are all, is just something somebody heard that had them facilitate an escape from the world because the world was too hard for them. And they're really, you know, missing a big piece. And, you know, I think it's very, very rare you find someone who wants to renunciate because they've owned the all experiences. I think you only really come to renunciate after you've done it all. And then it's like you're complete. But if you haven't, renunciation is not going to get you freedom. It's going to get you coming back over and over again.
Certainly in alignment with the story of the Buddha. You know, he had every sense experience available to him. He had harems, he had wealth, he had all sensory experiences, and then he, you know, made his choice. And, you know, for me personally, what I say for myself is that I want to know from inside of my experience. I want to know how to enter any domain and how to find freedom there, but not to feel like I need to skirt around any or evade or be above any to have freedom. In fact, you know, before I was doing my Buddhist teaching, I was a social worker. It's like, how can I go into any world and find freedom and connection there? Mm-hmm. And that truly is my practice. And so that's the practice I found through OM, because if I can find freedom and connection in an area as confronting as sex and orgasm, I can find that anywhere.
But you were going to give it all up, I mean, previously, and thinking that you had already owned it all. You were ready to do that. And I'm just curious that, because there's a lot of people who still think that, and maybe they're, of course, everybody's different, have their own experiences, but a lot of people are taken in by what I would call a certain dogma of, you know, they are attracted to that because they're really afraid of the world, and this is a safe way out. I don't know if that's true in your case, but I'm just saying there's so much dogma around all these practices that they sort of, what am I trying to say? They don't fulfill the human being. They fulfill the religious teachings. And that's, you know, that's what I'm against, I would say, something like that.
I you know, actually one of my beloved Buddhist teacher said he was born a preemie and lived the first months of his life in one of those little isolation sort of cradles that they have. And he said, I feel really at home when I'm sitting alone on my zafu in the meditation hall, because I think I'm used to that from an early age. And, you know, for me, that's the story of, like, we, you know, spiritual practices, they can go with our conditioning. You know, we were, you know, for me, I was a really shy child, and I didn't really know how to be with these weird people in the world. Like, what are these humans? And so it was really comfortable being alone and quiet and isolation. And now on this side of things, I actually think it's really important that, you know, my awakening, if you want to call it that, is about being in connection. And that's going to look different for each person, but you really want to look at and see, you know, am I reinforcing my conditioning and my, you know, my psychological habits, or am I breaking them through expanding and doing things that are outside of my comfort zone?
Right, and that's true. And on the other end of it, I mean, what I do see is that, okay, you're having orgasms, you're doing these demos, you're in expanded pleasure. Is that an evolution, or is it a drug? You know, is it like, you know, a feel good, which is okay, there's nothing wrong with it feeling good, but is it become another trap, is what I'm asking.
I just like sitting meditation or yoga or psychedelics or anything. For me, it's all the way that you use it. So you can cultivate a lot of energy, and then you can use it for, you know, if you want to call it good or bad. I actually don't have those necessarily those judgments, but you can use that energy to fall asleep, you know, in a habitual way, or you can use it to wake up. And so that's what we, you know, at One Taste, we teach the practice, and then we teach a lot about how to live it. And we work with people a lot on using that energy to wake up. Suddenly you have all of this amazing amount of energy to use. So do you use it to be in service to other people? You know, do you use it to break habits that hold you back? Do you use it to see more clearly and have your eyes open? And so that's the invitation. And that's, you know, when we talk about living a turned on life, it's about the practice of OM and then actually being able to use it to wake up the rest of your life.
Okay, I get that, and I really do appreciate that, and I appreciate what That teaching. So you're saying, okay, we have this amazing sexuality. I mean, this amazing, in a way, feel good experience, and our nervous system is activated in ways that it is not normally functioning because there's this charge running through us. Now, how do you then use it? I mean, there's Taoist techniques and, tantric techniques, but you don't really do that. I mean, the One Tasters don't really work on those type of techniques. So how is it that you use this energy or the charge running through the nervous system and do other things with that energy?
Yeah. You know, one thing I would say is that OM teaches, it's just like a sitting meditation will teach you certain things about mindfulness. OM teaches you to access the state of flow. And I think many people have heard about the state of flow, but that ability to be fully inside of your experience in a way that you discover more is possible than you thought. Because, you know, you're inside of your experience, but you're beyond your normal mind state. And the same thing happens as you cultivate this energy. You know, the more that you have, that you're able to break through your normal sense of possibility. And again, like, that's why I really love what you said, like, sensitivity to a possibility greater than ourselves. That's really what, you know, not only do you have the sensitivity, but you actually have the energy to be able to break through and see the possibility greater than yourself. And so, you know, we work with a lot of other modalities as well. You know, you're flooded with all of this energy. You know, we do a lot of work to look at fears, you know, where are fears and habits that hold people back. And many people who do OM, they do daily writing of being able to look at their fears and what might be underneath them so they're not just driven by their habits. You know, we're very much a service-led organization, so being of service to other people. We actually we've had service for many years, and recently we just started a foundation. And that foundation is for both victims and perpetrators who are debilitated by the story of the experience they had, and actually how they can go through a process of, you know, narrative therapy, of OM, of other modalities, to be able to experience a more empowering narrative. And so things like this, you know, fueling this and being able to share it with others. You know, we all know if you just take everything you have and focus it back on yourself, you're probably going to just feel a little crazy. So, you know, for us, it's a lot about being able to share and have our attention on other people, to move beyond our fears and that self-centered way of living, and instead be able to be people who can bring this thing into the world.
So you're saying victims and perpetrators of a sexual type of experience, is that what your focus is in that area?
For the foundation, it really is anything. We're co-creating this foundation with a man named Ulysses Slaughter. He's an incredible, incredible man from
Philadelphia.
What's
his name? You said what? What's it called? What's his name called?
His name is Ulysses Slaughter. It's okay. His real name. He grew up in Philadelphia, and when he was a young man, I believe he was 12 years old, his father shot and killed his mother. And for many years, all he lived with was a revenge fantasy of killing his father. His father, you know, for many, many years, that's all he thought of. And when his father was released from prison, he actually, as an adult man, finally went to go and find his father to kill him. But he had an awakening and realized that actually what he was meant to do was to forgive him and to reconcile. And they had a beautiful reconciliation before his father died. And so we met Ulysses, and we came together to create this foundation, because he had that experience of being a victim of this crime and what it felt like to live inside hatred and retribution for all of those years, and then the power of reconciling. And that's the work that we're doing together, because ultimately that's also what orgasm does. It brings us into connection.
I'm just missing the connection between forgiveness and the orgasm.
When you're in the state of orgasm, connection is undeniable, and you realize how deeply we're wired for connection. you know, in the same way where you might do mindfulness meditation, and you can sense at a level that we're all connected. We hear about it philosophically, but it's actually hard to really embody and know that. Well, in the experience of OM, you know undeniably you're connected. You feel something in your body, and your partner feels it in theirs. And not only that, you're in a room with other people who OM, and you could all sense and feel each other in a different way. You develop that capacity. And once you develop that capacity, you realize you're not separate from other people, whether you see them as for or against you, whether you see yourself as a victim or a perpetrator, or them as a victim and a perpetrator. And so, in fact, what happens is that connection takes over rather than isolation or separation. And when we met Ulysses, it would seem like these are totally different worlds, but what happened as we started talking was realizing how connected they were, that reconciliation is orgasm. Orgasm is reconciliation. It's the expression of it on an energetic level. And so we started talking and developed this foundation, which was being able to use what we've learned through the practice of orgasmic meditation along with narrative therapy and provide the opportunity for people who have either had the experience of being a perpetrator or the experience of being a victim in any realm, not necessarily in sexual violence, in any realm, but being able to go into and re-experience connection. Because we know in any community, in anywhere, that the way that healing happens is in connection, not in isolation, not in putting people outside of things. That's a punishment model. And right. What we're interested in is a reconciliation model.
So if someone's a perpetrator, meaning that usually, let's say, in sexual abuse, that they are not seeing the human being, there's an abuse because they want what they want, but there's no connection then in most of those types of abuse situations, whether it's physical abuse, emotional abuse, they're not seeing the other person. So there's no connection in those situations. How do you create connection with someone who doesn't know the value of connection?
Well, so I think we all want connection, ultimately. And, you know, many people have, for different reasons, have become disconnected. And I think this comes back to the value of the sensitivity of feeling,
right.
Is when you teach people to feel, and obviously people need to be willing, they need to want to learn. You know, Ulysses' dad wanted this. He wanted to learn how to connect, and he was available for that. So once people make that decision, you know, there needs to be that conscious decision. Once people have made that decision, we can teach them how to feel. That's one thing undoubtedly we can do, is we can teach someone who wants to feel how to feel, whether they were a perpetrator.
How do you teach them to feel?
We teach them through the practice of OM. You know,
it becomes a physical feeling then, right?
Exactly. You know, through bringing your attention moment after moment to this one point, and this one point of having a natural incentive of pleasure, but this one point of sensation is that you really can learn to feel, you know, like, and we've had people like guys who are very heady tech guys who say like, I can't, you know, I don't believe I have a body. I just exist in my head programming on the computer every day. You know, whether it's them or someone who's frozen from trauma, is that slowly there's a de-thawing process that happens where, you know, moment by moment where they're feeling this connection, the finger on clit, that over time, truly what happens is they learn to feel. And they learn to feel more than just their genitals. They feel their whole body. They feel their emotions. They feel everything that has been shut down or not felt before. And then, you know, through the other practices we do, you know, in the context of the One Taste Foundation, doing narrative therapy to help integrate that. Because it's one thing to feel, and then actually how do you integrate that with everything else that's going on? We do a lot of integration so that not only can you feel, but you can express it in the world and use it for more connection.
Well, I can understand how women could feel if they're being, you know, OM, but if a guy is OMing, it might be harder, maybe not, but for them to feel, because they're the stimulator, but not being stimulated in the same way. How do you help men do that?
It's counterintuitive, right? Like you think, oh, I'm doing to you, so how would I feel? And And really, you know, it's just like, it's not a surprise, like we think that way, like that's usually, like I certainly thought that way, is that, you know, for me, before I learned to own, I had an exchange model of sex, you know, you do me, I do you, it's all very equal. For me, being equal and fair was very important. And so there was that sense of exchange, of commerce-based relating, commerce-based sexuality, a balance the book. And but at the same time, it wasn't actually fulfilling. And where Om turned things on its head for me, you know, both in being stroked, but also I stroke, so I know what it's like from the other side too, is that there can be equal feeling on both sides, which is crazy-making to think, well, it's just a finger, you know, how are you going to feel? But in the same way, you know, great analogy is thinking of a velvet or a really soft teddy bear, right? When you hold that, you're not touching that velvet or you're not, you know, holding that teddy bear because it feels good to the thing. You're doing because it feels good to your hand. You're taking pleasure from that experience. And in the same way, when somebody strokes, you're in the stroking position, you're stroking for your pleasure. And truly, amazingly, when you put your finger down on a clit and you get it on that right spot, which most people have never learned to do, but when you get it on that spot, it truly is like plugging into an electricity. You can even feel a jolt in your finger. And then over time, as you're owning, you start feeling more and more and more in your body. Some people instantly, but you asked the question before too about how long it took me. You know, there was moments I felt it strongly in the beginning, but it was the same practice over time that allowed me that anytime I lie down, you know, or anytime I stroke, I can feel a lot because I've cultivated it, just like any practice, whether it's piano or tennis or yoga, that you can cultivate it over time.
How long have you? Yeah, go ahead.
I've been doing it for 7 years.
You've been this is your seventh year you're going on.
I'm going into my eighth year now. It was my seventh own birthday in January.
But so I know the men and I have felt it, you know, but it's still, I still feel like I'm not experiencing what the woman's experiencing with the oming, which is okay. I'm happy to have them have, but it's, I mean, I guess some men do with the cultivation. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. You know, and sometimes I'm even shocked, you know, because it goes against what I would imagine. But, you know, I talk to men who om regularly and they'll say, like, I feel more in om than I do in sex because I'm so attuned. The amount of sensation I feel in my body. Sometimes I feel like I'm being electrocuted. It's that intense, very pleasurable electrocution, but nonetheless, that feeling of being flooded because they've so learned to feel at this point of connection. And it is something. Some people feel it right away. And I say men, but it actually could be any gender that strokes. It doesn't matter who you are.
Right.
You know, men or women are in between. You're stroking the clit, and it's that point of connection that has you feel. And so when people start, they might start by not feeling much. But then definitely over time, what it takes is a dedication. You know, in the same time, most people, when they pick up a violin to start, it doesn't sound great. It sounds quite horrific. You know, they haven't learned how to do the strings in that fine-tuned way. But without a doubt, if you put in the practice over time, you can feel it. And I've seen it because I've seen people who are very disconnected from their body or from sensation over time feel more and more and more. And like I said, you know, you can read science on this, that our brains are wired for this. Our brains are wired for connection. And when we do practice, just like in meditation, you can cultivate aspects of your brain wiring, your neural wiring. You can still do the same in OM. You can cultivate that capacity for connection and to feel each other. And to feel yourself and feel yourself in connection with a partner through this practice.
But can you talk about a little bit of your being inside the OM? Let's say like the demo I saw or something else, like the as it begins, like the stages you feel. I know it's always different, but generally, until it's like, you know, you're out of control and you're screaming and bouncing off the table or something, you know, can you describe what those like early sensations are and like how you feel it and where in your body, like what it feels like? Of course, you can't really describe sensation because you have to feel it. But if you could,
sure,
like take us through like a like a, one of your more intense homing experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually one thing I want to say is that you can describe it, because as part of the practice that we do is at the end of an om is that we share what we call a frame, which is one moment from the experience when you felt something in your body. And because what we found is that you can start to name extraordinary experiences. And when you do, they happen more often. So it's not this vague experience that you had and you don't quite remember it, but you can go in and you can pinpoint it. And over time, you can do that more and more and say, you know, there was a moment 5 minutes into the om where you stroked up lightly and I felt a jolt of electricity go through my head, up through my belly, through my chest, and then it turned into the feeling of butterflies down my arm. You can describe that intimately. And then what happens is in the rest of life, your ability to communicate, to actually pinpoint experience or sensation or emotion and be able to name it and communicate it and therefore develop connection with another person improves.
Oh, I see. So you're saying your ability to articulate the subtle feelings of life are amplified because you're naming these almost indescribable frames in indescribable terms.
Exactly. So again, you know, you're using different aspects of your brain to be able to communicate and be in connection. And the one other thing I wanted to say, too, is interesting because you brought up, like, oh, you might be, you know, there's the range of om, and then when you're in the height of it, and there might be screaming and all this kind of stuff, is one thing I want to say to everybody out there that's listening is that we have an image of in our minds of what the height of orgasm looks like. And for me, the height of the most intense orgasm is often completely still and completely silent because there is so much electricity moving through my body, it would be called nailed. Like, I can't move because there is, I am so completely saturated with this experience. And it looks completely different than anything that we see in the media or anywhere around sex. There might be other things.
That's important, I think. I mean, no, I just want to stay with that point for a second because, we have been conditioned to think we know what it looks like, and you're giving us a whole different experience of what's possible, or you know, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I want everyone to know is that people often judge their sexual experiences, and this is especially true for women, but for anyone that we think, like, oh, I don't have it, or I'm broken somehow. Like, you know, we have this, like, culture of deficit or dysfunction, right? We're medicalized. We have all of these ideas of where we're broken. But truthfully, it's everybody can access this. And not only, it might start with something very subtle, but when you're willing to let go of all the extra, the thrusting, the screaming, the tricks, the special moves, the heavy pressure, when you're willing to go into that more subtle, like this light, tiny stroke on the clit, what can open is it's so beyond what we thought was possible, you know. And again, this is coming back to that experience of flow or that sensitivity, is that we can develop the ability to access states and experiences we never even knew were possible because we were stuck in this one way of doing it.
So you think there's a physiology in the human body that in a way you're accessing and some other people, but that most people are totally unaware of exists?
Yeah, I was not aware of this possibility. I mean, that's for me why I thought this whole realm of sex and relating isn't worth it. I'd rather go meditate alone somewhere. I never had experienced it before. I had a sense that something was possible, but I'd never touched it. And when I started filming, and what I was able to cultivate was the ability to experience it in connection with another person. And so I know without a doubt, you know, what I knew before was nothing compared to what I know now about sensation and connection and the amount that I can feel of myself and others through my body.
But you also said you're oming and there's sex, and so you're, and so sex is a different, I mean, intercourse, I guess, is what you mean by sex as opposed to oming, which is stroking, right? Is that what the difference you're saying
yeah.
between?
All the and kinds so do, of sex, you know? oral sex, intercourse, whatever other kind of sex act, you know, that you like to do.
But you're saying there's a difference? You get that same electricity in those realms? Or is the energy transferable between acts, you know? Or is it totally different for you in some ways?
So Omi has absolutely changed my experience of sex in every way, in the way that I have sex, in the way that I relate, in how much I feel. And so, yes.
Well, give me some more. Can you, if you don't mind, specifics?
Give me some details. You know, there's so many things to say, you know, that I really, you know, when you're having this experience, number one, when you've learned to have that much attention, but also you've spent that time having your pussy stroked, you know, 15 minutes, and that attention, it changes. And so the depth that I can feel in sex, you know, the amount of electricity and sensation and all of it that I feel in my body is completely different. So it's not just trying to make something happen in sex and like hope that there's something good that comes out of it. But it's like the minute that there's contact, even before there's contact, just being able to be in the same room as someone or in connection with them, the electricity can start moving between me and another person.
Well, and, I feel and it then, right now.
Yeah, like right now. In any time, and you can play with it. You know, then the world's a world of play because things are open and can flow, you know, rather than feeling constricted and tight and like it's such a huge effort to get it open.
Right. So, but would you rather just own than have sex or what? I mean, because you sound like you really, you know, have such deep, amazing experiences. But it's all different, I guess, right?
I love it all. You know, Om is like a home base and it's the place I come back to because I know if I don't have that, I won't have the rest. So it's like going to the gas station and you fill up and for me, I fill up and I cultivate and then I can choose to go enjoy it in all these other places in my life. But it's the thing that I'll come back to because it's the place where I can access and cultivate this state. And then it's amazing what I can do with it everywhere else. And ultimately, it's not just about, you know, the practice. The practice is amazing, and then it's about living it.
Right. Do you want to give us a little brief tour of an OM, like an internal? I mean, if you want, something how it builds. Yeah.
You know, every time I lie down for an OM, it's different. And it's based on how I feel, how the person I'm OMing with feels, you know, all of these different things. But for me now, when I lie down, I know it's 15 minutes when I can let go. That I've actually said, like, okay, I have this container. I can let go inside of it. I don't have to worry about anything else. We put a timer on, so I know there's a beginning and an end. And that worrying, vigilance part of my mind can actually relax. And then when he puts his finger down, it is a feeling of a pocket opening in my clit and electricity starting to pour between us. And as he strokes up, you know, light, deliberate strokes up, I can feel the vibration starting to go down my legs and up my back. And I feel a sense of my entire body opening, even a feeling sometimes of like any kind of sense of a boundary dissolving as far as like a sense of physical where I begin and where I end kind of boundary, but actually this very deep opening. And then he'll stroke down because, you know, the energy's gone up and the energy starts going down and he follows it and he's stroking down and it can feel like this dense, weighty, thick sex energy and feels incredibly pleasurable and like engorgement and wetness and deep breathing and all of that coming up. Nothing is created. Everything is just coming through. And then it goes up again and then down again. And it really is this entire ride. And sometimes there's climax, but a lot of the time there isn't. And when there isn't, that ride can just go on and on and on. And then at 13 minutes, 2 minutes before it's over, you know, he deliberately does downstrokes and that helps ground, you know, all of this energy that's been cultivated, that's expanded. He strokes down and it's that feeling of almost like condensing back into this form as I know it. And and both of us being able to ground all of that energy. And then at 15 minutes, no matter what's happening, he ends, and we end the OM, and he does some grounding pressure. We share a frame, and I put my pants back on, and I go on and do whatever is next in my day. But I know that
don't,
both
But
of
don't
us,
you feel like you want to, I mean, at times, say, well, let's keep going, 15 minutes, just I'm just getting started. I mean, don't you want that sometimes? I'm just curious.
You know, truly for me, I love the 15 minutes because I know, like, my body and my mind can relax into that. I don't have to wonder if suddenly it's going to change or he's going to try something different. But it develops, you know, as women, we need that containment and the safety. Actually, anybody does to go into orgasm. So as women, our brains need to, that part of our brain needs to relax. And the container of OM creates that. So it means I can completely surrender because I trust and know that this container is going to be held. And when it ends, like, I feel even more connected and more trust and more respect for that person because they've also, no matter how amazing it is, like how, whew, like fireworks, whatever's happening, that we end that experience. And then we can come back and say, like, hey, let's meet up again later or tomorrow or next week and have another OM. You know, there's no urgency. Like, there's plenty to be had. And so we don't live in scarcity of feeling like we have to have it now or it's going to be over. Because I know that I have that capacity inside of my body, so I can lie again down next time and access it again.
I see. So it's the whole thing towards, yeah, there is a thing about scarcity and, you know,
yeah,
get as much as we can while we can or else, you know, who knows. But when you learn to relax inside of that, then, yeah, you're acting from a whole different level.
We come from fullness. Like, you know that you can have it and that you have enough and you can come back to it when you want, so you don't have to grab. And a lot of us in the world are scarce around sex, and so there's a lot of grabbing or a lot of fear. But, you know, once you've been able to cultivate it and you have a practice, then it means that you can come back to it when you want it and you can leave from that place of being fully nourished.
Right. So how could you really... what's your vision for real? And I know you have a big festival coming up and we'll talk about that, but what's your vision for really changing that? Because a lot of men feel that way. A lot of women feel that way. That's desperate, you know, not getting enough or not having, or, I mean, how would you change the mindset of the planet, of the way men and women relate to each other? If you guys had a chance to do your stuff out there in the big way.
Absolutely. Well, you know, what's happening and what we want to continue to see happen is people learning to feel. And when people learn to feel, they're in connection. It's the way we learn to feel is in connection to others. And then when we feel and we connect, we create this web of interconnection, of interdependence. And in that, it can just expand further and further and further. And then you have a world of people who can feel. And when you have a world of people who feel, you have empathy. And when you have that, it changes everything. And not only do you have people who have empathy, but you have people who are turned on. And that means that you can play, that you have energy to create, to do things differently, to be more sensitive and to live in greater possibility. And, you know, when you're in a room full of OMers, you know, that you feel the difference. You feel the difference in relating, in creativity and in energy, because we're cultivating that and we're cultivating the web of connection.
Right. But I have to admit, I've done the OMing practice a lot. And sometimes I feel connection and sometimes there's absolutely no connection, or is my definition of connection different than what you mean by connection?
I think there are different connections. Definitely, sometimes we can have an idea of what connection looks like. You know, connection can look like a deep eye gazing, and you might feel it in a certain way or an emotional expression. But, you know, ultimately for us, when we think of connection, it means you can feel the other person. And when you OM, you can start feeling another person. You can feel when they're angry. You can feel when they're loving. You can feel when they're upset or they're stressed or they're excited. And that, you know, without anything extra, without anything more needed, means when you can feel that, you can attune to that other person and you're connected to their experience. So it doesn't have to look like best friends or you're in love or it's this, you know, syrupy kind
but
of intimacy.
It's not. I mean, truthfully, it's not. Sometimes it's just like an anatomy lesson, or it's you know what I'm saying? It's sometimes it's, I mean, of course it's different for you because you've been really inside it and cultivating it. And for some people, I think connection is a stretch. I think, you know, in my experience, like, I have not felt connection sometimes in those experiences. Uh-huh. And I've wanted to, and maybe it's me who shut down or the person on the other side of shut down. I don't know what to do about that. So that's like a question I would ask sort of inside like a class. And what would you say?
I actually love that question because I think the other thing here is that we're all human beings learning to feel. And, you know, we're perfectly imperfect. And so it's also, you know, part of what we do is we actually give room for people to be human. And so in the process of learning to feel, you're going to have times where you feel numb or you feel disconnected, and then you learn how to feel what that's like, but to not check out. So it's like, oh, right now I feel really frustrated. I want to feel this depth of connection, and I don't. You know, even the other day, I had an OM with my OMing partner, and I said, like, God, I feel like I can't let you in today. Like, there's all of this stuff going on for me, and I feel disconnected. But because I OM, I had the ability to say that to him and then to actually talk it through until we could find the point where the energy could flow again. And so it's not that, like, oh, we live in this magical world where there's just this deep feeling of connection all the time. You know, we're on a path of cultivating it. And definitely your capacity increases, but it also means that when you're willing to feel, you're willing to feel it all, the good and the bad, where you are connected and when you're not connected. And sometimes it can be more painful than being numbed out because you realize all the places where you can't feel or where you're not connected. But then gradually over time, those also thaw out, but it's not instantaneous. And it means that you're willing to be human with other humans and all the messy, complicated feeling or not feeling things that happen there. But for me, that's also what's beautiful about doing this practice, any practice of connection, is that when we can feel each other in those challenging, difficult human places, it's ultimately what leads to the feeling of connection.
Right. So do you have a regular, steady partner, sex partner? You don't mind me asking.
I do. I mean, over the years, I've OMed with many different people. Uh-huh. I have people personally for myself. I have different people that I OM with that I have, you know, relationships where, you know, I know them, I like them, I trust them. We come together and we practice the practice. You know, there's other people who OM as monogamous couples and they use that to benefit their relationship. There's other people who are single and they OM with one or other partners truly in a practice basis, just like you would maybe salsa dance with somebody or do partner yoga. You know, in this way, bringing it into this realm, they do the practice together in that way. And I do have that with different partners. And for me, you know, partner that I have sex with, I also OM with, but I also OM with other people that I don't have sex with. And really what it is, it's a coming together to have this practice.
But why, I'm just curious, why wouldn't you have sex? I mean, if it's sort of all about energy and movement and connection, why wouldn't you have sex with your other partners and just OM with them instead of sex?
Well, one thing that OM really gave me and continues to give me is the ability to feel what's the right or resonant relationship with someone. So in the past, I might think, you know, the partner I was with before I came here, he was a gorgeous man. He was beautiful. He was extremely kind. We had all the same values. And for some reason, I didn't feel electricity with him. And I tried everything. Like, what's wrong? This guy is perfect. My mother loved him. He would be an amazing life partner. And what I realize now is that, like, our thing wasn't to be in a sexual relationship, you know, whether you want to call it your karma or, you know, what was there between us. The thing that was there between us was a deep friendship, and I still love him, and he's still a beautiful friend. And, you know, I could OM with him, but it's not meant to be this other thing. And so what I've learned in OMing is that I can open and I can feel another person in many ways. And I can feel when the energy with me and another person is sex and wants to express itself that way. And I can feel where it's like a deep creative partnership or it's a very soft and loving place. And so I would even say like 90% of the people I've owned with, they haven't been sexual partners because that's just not what was resident.
But I want to know. I get that. I do. And I think that's really honest and clear. But I do want to know what the difference, because if you're being owned and you're having the sexual experience, because oming stimulates that, then what's the difference between, what's the difference for you, I guess, internally, between that feeling and getting off and being turned on by someone who's oming you and the sexual relationship? I'm curious to just know how you feel it.
Well, so first of all, I'll say it's not that someone's oming me. I think we om together because it's not one person doing something to another. It's more two people plugging in. So just a linguistic thing. But but yeah, you know, the difference between that and sex is, you know, sometimes it might be like, I would also say that there can be people that I om with and a sexual experience comes through. And I think like, I didn't expect that with that person. Or it might even be before we om is that, you know, om has expanded my sense, you know, before I had this picture of this particularly beautiful man and that's who I would be sexually attracted to or I thought I should be. And in learning to feel through om, I actually can find myself attracted to different people. I mean, I just realize I am. I was before, but I couldn't acknowledge it, that, you know, that connection between my genitals and my brain wasn't working in the same way. Mm. And now it can be like, wow, you know, I'm really attracted to this person. They don't fit within the kind of idea of who I should be attracted to, but I am, because I can trust a natural intelligence in my body that's telling me this. Mm. And you know, to answer your question at the other level there is that it truly is just about sensing and feeling. Some owns I have, they're not sexual in sensation in the way that sex is. Mm-hmm. What I might feel in an om with somebody is like an electric feeling or a soft feeling or, you know, a really vibratory feeling. But it's not a place that my body doesn't say, I want to have sex with this person. And I
even though it's
body,
being turned on, I mean, your body is being turned on, I mean, activated, sexualized.
It's being turned on. It doesn't necessarily mean I want to have sex with everybody. And I think that's a really important distinction. But what by being turned on, what I mean is that my body is alive and it's speaking to me. So I can listen to it. And when I listen to it, it tells me what it wants. So it might say, oh, with this person, I want to keep 50 feet distance because that's actually what's right for me. And with this person, I want to get together and write a book. And with this person, I feel like I want to sit really close to them in silence and just feel them. But my mind might have all kinds of other ideas of what I think is right because it has all kinds of conditioning and all of these things. But my body, what I'm learning through OM, what I've learned through OM and continue to, is my body has a deep instinct and can guide me. And it speaks as a desire. But as I do the OM practice more and more, that desire is purified so I can listen to it more deeply. And I have an indisputable guide internally that can draw me towards things or pull me away from things that's not based on confusion or fear or resentment or conditioning, but is instead based on a deep intuitive sensory knowing.
Right. I get that. And really, thank you for going in and articulating that point of view, because I think that's really important. And the fact that you do know your body, you do trust your body, as opposed to somebody else who might not want a sort of connection because of a conditioning or because of an idea or because there's an old pattern stuck in them that they don't even know what they're feeling. So, you know, I think it's important to explore the avenue of the body and let the body lead you, but only after all the junk's been cleared out. I mean,
that's it. I mean, we have to do this. I mean, that's why we have practices. You know, is so that we can clear out. And because you look around, I think we've all, and certainly this is me, was like trying to fit myself into a box because I thought it was what was supposed to make me happy. And we're taught, like, this relationship will make you happy or this kind of person will make you happy. And then we're tortured because it's like, well, I have all these things. Why aren't I happy? I must be ungrateful. You know, there's something wrong with me. I should just make myself happy here. And it's actually kind of one of those oh, it's almost like a toxic thing in that kind of, you know, just accept things as they are culture. Because actually part of accepting what they are is when you can listen to your body and you can listen to that natural intelligence that says this isn't right, even if you think it should be. And then to be able to be guided to what is actually resonant, to actually be attuned so you can align yourself with what's actually resonant, even if it's outside of your ideas of what you think it should look like, whether it's in relationship or work or, you know, your personality and how you express yourself. But any of those things, when we can attune, it can take us in a totally different way.
Yeah, or the opposite, kind of reverse of that, which is maybe this is right even though it's not what I want it to look like, you know? It's like it's knowing the difference and trusting somehow that there is this great intelligence to the body, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that it does, it can know beyond our conditioned mind and this thing that we try to use to think through everything and plan and rationally plot it out, that there's actually a deeper wisdom that we can access. And we can do that through it, attuning to this other sense. And that sense can guide us in a way that's below the radar of our cognitive mind. And we can use that cognitive mind in many ways, but this other thing that will be able to attune to things and to guide us in ways that we never thought were possible.
Right. Okay. Just one more question I have along those lines is that it seems like, I saw a film where you get into oral sex or the one taste, and it's like a whole another level of that. Is that becoming more of a practice? Can you talk about what's behind that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, is once you've cultivated this orgasm, this energy in your body, you can use it in a lot of different ways. And it's really a lot of fun to use in different sex acts. And what we're actually teaching in those videos, OM-based sex videos like oral sex, we have one that's called, I think, Slow Oral for Her, is that we bring the principles of OM into your sex life. So what does it mean when you give up any goal? What does it mean when you do it for your pleasure, when you're guided by sensation, being willing to follow peaks and valleys? What does it look like to suck a cock from that perspective when a woman does it for her pleasure? Not to make anything happen for him, but how it completely changes everything.
And Let's talk about that a little more. Has that been your experience, or is that something you just witnessed other people?
Oh, I've had that experience, Alan. It's true. It's very true.
So what is it that gives you pleasure in that? I mean, just curious, like what?
Just curious, right? It really, for me, to move from a, like I said before, even that kind of commerce or, you know, based relating where it's like I'm doing something for him because I feel obliged or because he did something for me or even because I want to make him happy, you know, in a slightly twisted codependent way that we actually think is acceptable. That instead, if I say, I do this for my pleasure, I do it because it feels good in my body, it feels resonant with me, you know, to be able to take his cock and do whatever I want with it, and it feels so good. And not only, it completely changes it for me because I'm doing it and it's turning myself on. And then in turn, when I'm turned on, that energy goes back to him, that sensation and feeling goes back to him in a totally different way. And certainly men who are with turned on women who are like this will say it is a completely different experience to have your cock sucked by a woman who's turned on and doing it for her pleasure than to have it done by a woman who's doing it for you.
Oh, I'm sure it's much more pleasurable to have it done for someone when it's done for someone. Because then, yeah, I get that. I think, don't you think? I mean, hasn't that been
we're
the experience?
Connected.
Yes.
We're yes. connected, right? So like if someone's giving you a massage and they're like, oh, I'm doing this for you and I'm kind of miserable and like hopefully you'll give me something after or wash the
right.
dishes. You know, versus like, oh, I'm giving you this massage and it feels so good in my body and I can't stop touching you. It's like, wow, there's a world of difference.
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay. So is this becoming more of a practice for the one tasters?
You know, I wouldn't call it a practice. I would say that, you know, in the same way that we talk about creating and service and living life, that like sex is one area where you can apply the principles of OM. And we encourage people to do it because it makes sex a lot better and you can access these incredible states. And it's not the practice in the way that OM is the practice, where we have a 15-minute container and we practice it with different partners. But, you know, as anybody who's an adult who wants to go and explore and try that, we encourage them to do so.
Right. So let's talk about what is coming up. I mean, you have a big OM festival experience, right? Can you talk about what's going on there and when?
Yeah. Yeah, this March, 28th to 30th, so just 2.5 weeks away, we have the OM Experience, which is our annual conference. It's our second annual one, and it's in Oakland, California this year. And we have, you know, over 1,000 people come together to listen to incredible speakers, to learn the practice of OM, to take workshops, to connect. There's live entertainment. It really is a massive party and an opportunity to connect in the community, to learn more about OM, and also to hear from people. So, you know, for example, this year we have Naomi Wolf, the author of Vagina, Social Activist. We have Neil Strauss, you know, it seems like completely different people. We have Neil Strauss, author of The Game. He's a Rolling Stones contributing editor, a New York Times writer. Stephen Kotler, he is a flow hacker, so he's really explored flow states. His new book is called Rise of Superman, and he's looking at what creates flow states and really superhuman performance. On that stream, we have Brian Mulvaney, who's one of the creators of CrossFit, a massive fitness phenomena, which is really about human potential. You know, all the way to Gabrielle Anwar, you know, Hollywood actress. She was in The Tudors, Burn Notice, In Scent of a Woman, and she and a friend of hers is making a documentary, Catherine Oxenberg. They're making a documentary on, you know, emerging women's sexualities. So them plus countless other speakers are coming together, all talking from their own perspective, but really to the same thing, which is about the experience of flow in the state of orgasm, what we call unconditional sex, and that when you can tap into that, when you cultivate it, how it affects everything else, you know, whether it's in business, whether it's in life, in fitness, in creativity. But that there is this potential in the realm of sex, in the realm of orgasm, that we haven't touched before, and yet it's emerging, and all of these different people are speaking to it. So that's the conference that's coming up. We have about 14 speakers. It's 3 days, over 1,000
people. What's the
dates
of that?
It's March 28th to 30th in Oakland, California.
And how much is the 3 days?
And the 3 days, so for all 3 days, it's just $150, and that gives you access to everything in the conference, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And you expect 1,000 people from all over the country to come?
We expect over 1,000 people, absolutely.
Really?
So people, not only from all over the country, people are flying from Europe, from Asia, people come from all over to come to this conference, and certainly a ton from the States and Canada, North America as well.
So, and Nicole, of course, the founder, will be speaking there. What's her, like, new focus, or where's Nicole going at this time?
Yeah, on Friday night, Nicole will open the conference. There'll be live entertainment. She'll open. She'll do a demonstration of orgasmic meditation, like we talked about at the beginning. And
is that
she'll
with
be
you?
Talking about,
are you going to do? Are you going to volunteer for that?
We'll see what happens. This year I'm holding the overall conference, so we'll see what happens. Last year I did the demo. We like to see what feels resonant in the moment. We also follow the sensation for what's right for that. But yeah, this year she's going to be talking about unconditional sex. It's her new book that she's working on, which is about entering the flow state of orgasm and the human potential when you can connect to that state, when you cultivate your orgasm, what's potential in your sex and your relationships and your life. So she's going to be talking all about that, and it really will be the launch of the unconditional sex movement.
The launch of the unconditional sex movement. And can you explain what that actually means, unconditional sex?
Yeah. Well, unconditional sex is the ability to live and the expression of living in orgasm, where your sex and your way of being is not dependent on circumstances or on you know, anything external, but actually that you've cultivated this state, this experience, energy enough in yourself that you have freedom of response to those around you. So you actually have, you know, and this is really ultimately in OM, what we find happens is that you have uninhibited connection, and you have uninhibited response. So it's actually being able to come into resonance and to respond to life or to anything that comes in a resonant way.
And so uninhibited, really is, like what, well, whatever the conditions of our lives or our past has been is what inhibits us, you're saying, right?
Exactly. Well, and I would ultimately say that it's usually fear, it's usually resentment, some kind of constriction.
But that's there. I mean, I'm sorry. If that's there, it's not just like saying, oh, I'm over it. You have to do something to work through it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, I think that comes back to what we talked about, where it's like, it's really human work that we do. It's not like you come and suddenly you're elevated into this peaceful, blissful state and you just hang out there. You know, this is human work, actually learning to feel and learning to connect. And so, you know, that's why we practice. That's why we have community. That's why we have classes. That's why we do all of this, because it's a process of becoming embodied, connected human being.
Wow. No, thank you. Thank you for your time and for your passion and for your turn on and for your honesty, for talking about, you know, your own experience, really, is what you're talking about. So.
Truly, it's a lot of fun, and I loved it. Was fun being here and sharing the orgasm with you.
Yes, it was, because I feel you. This is connection. Like when you are talking to me, and I'm feeling what's going on with you and your excitement. That is what I call connection.
Me too. It's like you can feel when it's open. You can sense it in your body, right? You can feel like, oh, this is happening. There's connection. And then you can feel when it's not. And that thing is undeniable.
So if it's not there, you just acknowledge it's not there. You don't have to do anything about it not being there, right?
You know what? One thing we say is, this is the greatest turn on. And when you can actually name what's there, just like in an OM, and you can name the sensation, you can go deeper into it. You can understand it more. And most often it changes. You know, you say it, and saying the truth also creates connection. We could say also that truth is verbal orgasm.
When you, I like
when you
that.
Say the
who
truth, said,
who made
it
that,
opens things.
That's
I don't know. I think maybe Nicole said it once, but certainly it's something that we say.
I like that. Truth is verbal orgasm. It's brilliant. Yes, yes. Yes, I think you're right. So, but it's about being aware enough to feel what's not there, because most people just gloss over a non-connection, just saying, oh, that's how it is. But if we can talk about it, that the talking about it creates the connection. Exactly. Yes.
Absolutely. Just like I said, in the OM I had the other day, I couldn't feel the connection and I named it. And then through naming it and talking it and OMing, we actually found the connection again. But if I didn't name it, it would stay trapped inside of me. And one thing OM taught me was the ability to open and name those things that are there. It's being with reality as it is.
And I think that is just one of the side benefits of an OMing practice, you know. But you don't need to OM to know. I mean, that's true of every situation in our lives. If we could name the experience and articulate it and communicate that, you know, it goes out into the whole world.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's universal wisdom, and having a practice that teaches us to come back to it over and over again sure is helpful.
Right. Well, thank you. And I get that. And I think a practice taking that, just taking that sensitivity, I guess when the sensitivity is amplified because it's in the body. If I just take the sensitivity of my mind's awareness, it's not as probably maybe keen as it could be if I'm feeling my body and saying what's really happening here. So the body sort of trains the mind to be aware of what it's aware of, you know, to notice what it notices.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like we said in the very beginning, it's about living inside of your body. And that's really, as humans, how we learn to feel.
Yes. And that is really why we're here, is to live inside our body. I mean, I think that is the ultimate spiritual goal, is to be incarnational beings, you know, be in our body. We came here for a reason. It was to live. It wasn't to meditate ourselves out of here. It was to be here in the gift of what we've been given. That's my basic philosophy.
I agree fully.
Well, thanks, Justine. Thanks
Thank
for your time.
you.
And the website, I'll post my link to the website, but the overall website for the conference is what?
It's OMXPERIENCE. So omexperience.com.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know if I'll be able to make it. No, I have some other things going on this year, but you'll be back in New York, right?
Absolutely. We have a lot of ongoing events in New York, in LA, London, San Francisco. But yeah, definitely whoever should come out to the conference in a couple of weeks. It would be fun to see you there.
Okay, but the next time you're in New York, let's do a roundtable discussion with some of the One Tasters. We can do a television thing, come down to the studio, and we'll just do like a little, discussion.
That sounds great. Let's do it.
Okay,
be in touch.
We'll do it. Thanks. Talk to you.
That was a lot of fun. Thanks, Alan.
I'll send you a link of the posting, and you can share it as well. Okay.
Yeah, do it. I definitely will. I'll pass it around. And let me know if you need anything else for anything else.
All right, good. I'll put the link up and all that. So thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Okay, bye. That was Justine Dawson from One Taste, onetaste.us. You can check their website, and they're doing this conference, and they're also located in New York, I think Las Vegas, LA, San Francisco is their home base. And so you can check out what they're about, which is pretty, I would say, avant-garde, but also, as Justine described, very human in a way. And it's sort of accessing who we really are as human beings. Thanks for listening. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com, or email me at a@newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.